Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit Simplecast.com.
Recorded live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
You're listening to the D.C. Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. This is an episode of Notes on the Library. I'm David Quick, Adult Services Coordinator for DCPL and your best friend. Today we are talking about friends, friendship, and all things friendly at the library with two of our best friends, Emily Wagner and Carlos Isurieta. Did I say your name right?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the show, Emily and Carlos.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome back, Carlos.
Thank you for having us.
So you are both active with our friends groups, which I think even people who use the library a lot may not know about this kind of part of our library community of these friends groups that support our local branches. So that'll be kind of the main topic today, and you're both will be great representatives of our friends community. So I'll ask you each to kind of introduce yourself, just talk about yourself, what you do, whatever you like to share, but also talk about the branch that you're active with, what your friends group does, why you're a friend, that kind of thing. Emily, why don't we start with you?
Awesome. My name is Emily Wagner, and I have been a volunteer with the DC Public Library since 2012, I think. I actually started off in a very traditional route. I went directly through the volunteer person at DCPL and got matriculated, got fingerprinted at the police office. That was very exciting. and ended up actually placed at Mount Pleasant as a volunteer, where I helped to do a variety of things like taking books out of the catalog system, helping set up events, helping to do the bulletin board, whatever they wanted. Mm-hmm. But the amazing thing about DC Public Library staff, especially at Mount Pleasant at the time, is that they were all really on top of their games. They didn't really need extra hands. Mm. So I was there on a shift one day and sort of drifted over to the friends' room. And one of the librarians who was there was like, yeah, you should go in there and see what you can do, like self-direct in that room. And so that was my foot in the door with the friends group. So I tried to figure out who they were and what they did and what they needed, and ended up starting volunteering with them through that avenue. So that was 2013. I was at Mount Pleasant, which is how I met Carlos, until 2017, end of 2017.
It's been 2 years.
Yeah. And then I moved across town to Northeast DC, where I hooked up with the Rosedale Friends, and now I serve on that board.
Okay.
Yeah.
Carlos?
Cool. Hello, my name is Carlos Isurieta. As Emily said, I have been involved probably for 2 years. I sort of have been using the library, especially after college ended. I didn't have a job, and I'd spend a lot of time at the library. And I just thought it was a great community resource. After college, I moved to Mount Pleasant. I ended up going to one of the Friends book sales at Mount Pleasant, and that's where I met Emily. Mm-hmm. And so I think I volunteered because back then they had the yearly sale. So I helped out that weekend. It was a lot of fun. And then I think me and Emily kept in touch, and she ended up reaching out to me about possibly taking over as the treasurer, which, I'd never been on the board of the Friends. I really didn't know that much about them. I knew that they had this annual sale, but I didn't have as much background on what they actually did with the money that they raise and sort of the advocacy part of it as well. And so then after Emily left, I did take over as the president of the board. But Emily left it. It was just like a fine-tuned machine. Mm-hmm. So it was very easy to just kind of get in there. We had a great board too. So I'm really appreciative of what Emily has done to like build up the Friends of the Library at Mount Pleasant.
Mount Pleasant is like the coolest team, though. And when I was there, it was just a really transformative time for that group, because we went to having a book sale once a year, maybe twice a year, to having a book sale every Saturday. And a lot of that was driven by, the volunteers that we had, who were amazing, but also the fact that storage is a huge thing at Mount Pleasant. When I was there, that book room was like floor to ceiling stacked with books. And I think a lot of friends groups have, such an influx of books. People want to bring them to the library. They want to give them a second life. Mount Pleasant is an extremely illiterate community. There's books of all kinds from all people and all walks. So we had too much stuff. That's really what it came down to.
That's true.
So we transitioned at that time to sales every weekend, which opened a whole new era over there.
Okay. And you're starting to talk about book sales, which are kind of a ubiquitous part of the universe of Friends. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a second, but I will ask before that, how would each of you describe the neighborhood that your library is in and the library that you're serving in your Friends group?
Well, I moved there in 2007, and I think at the time, I think the transition, gentrification had already started with the Columbia Heights Metro. Before, you know, the only time that I really spent in Mount Pleasant or had heard about it was, I guess, the riots in the late 90s. And then, you know, like when I would go to the zoo. But anyways, in 2007, so when I moved there, you know, it's definitely changed a lot since then. I mean, but there's still a large community of Latino folks that live there. I'm originally from Ecuador. And so, you know, there are people from Central America, definitely from South America as well that I've met through there. There's a lot of families. And I think that's a real, like, benefit to it. Our neighborhood is having so many families, and we, you know, we have a lot of really amazing programs for them. And so I think that's one of those things. And we also have a lot of college students after they graduate, live in our neighborhood. You know, there's still group houses that are still somewhat affordable for folks. And so I think we get a lot of volunteers that come out of these, places.
Definitely. Yeah. Rosedale's pretty comparable, actually. We're way out at the end of H Street, kind of beyond the Starburst intersection in a really residential part of DC. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of schools there. So there's tons of school age kids in our community of patrons. I'd say when you're in the library, the large majority of folks who are there are folks who are under 18, mm-hmm. you know, kids who are coming in after school, before school, during school to yeah. hang out,
yeah.
to use the resources. And then there's the moms and the nannies and all the kids who are coming in for story hour and then the other folks, but really residential, I'd say. A lot of people there who are specifically seeking out a social community space to spend time in.
Mm-hmm. And you're in a unique space among our libraries.
That's true. We're a dual location, one of three. It's Rosedale, Deanwood, and Northwest 1, which means we share our space with Parks and Rec. Mm-hmm. So we're attached to a facility that has a pool and a court and a big Pee Wee Football League football field. Are all football fields the same size?
All standard ones.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Some librarian listening, look that up.
Yeah, thank you very much. More sporty people than us. Yeah, so we get the benefit of having a really nice flow of folks who are going maybe to the rec center for to use the facility, who then can come over to the library and seek out information or other resources. And we have some really amazing folks who are on the Rosedale staff of the rec center. Shout out to Jesse Webb, if you're listening, who are really excited about doing more stuff in collaboration. He just hosted a bike ride that had a books celebration at the end of it. We called it the Cookie Classic. He called it the Cookie Classic. And he's interested in doing more of that collaboration over time. So it's really cool to have that enthusiasm coming from the rec center as well.
Great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nick, the manager of Mount Pleasant, just texted me that yes, all football fields are the same. And then he texted a word that I won't repeat. And
thank
what
you,
were you going to say?
David, can I just chime in real quick?
Sure.
So we, over the summer, we had been filming this, it was for a student project on the libraries and the Friends group. And it's going to come out. It's just a quick, like 10-minute thing. But that day, the library had, I think the air conditioning had gone off, and it was during the day, so there was still a few hours for it to be open. And so we're standing in the new entrance, and it was really interesting to see how many people were coming to the library, and it was just like from every walk of life. I mean, there were like young students, there were like, you know, people that, you know, post-college, definitely older folks too. And it was just interesting to see like how they were using the library. And, you know, like we got a chance to talk to them. Because I asked them, I was like, oh, what are you doing here today? And some of them were, like, using the internet. Some of them were using the rooms for, like, studying, different things like that. Or just meeting up with different community folks.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a great, like, community source. And, yeah, if it closes for a day, you can definitely feel that.
For sure. Yes. And we in DCPL, we are a city whose library is open 7 days a week, which is pretty
amazing
for a public library. Yeah. It's hard work, but it's great that we can provide that service. So earlier you both started talking about book sales and things like that, and kind of fundraising is one part of what Friends do. What else do you see as your purpose as Friends of the Library?
We're like the hype people of our local branches. Friend is really the spirit of the the whole thing. We're there to be someone who, if the branch manager needs something, if they need a receipt reimbursed, if they need someone to come to a program and tell them if it's working or not, if they need feedback from the community, if they need just straight up cash, we're that friend that they can text and that they can rely on. We definitely also serve when asked as a voice for our branch. Mm-hmm. We at Rosedale work really closely with our branch manager, Anina, who's amazing. If there's something that she needs someone to speak up on, we are always available to her to be the person who can carry that message or to help push in a direction that she or the system needs us to go. We're very proud of being coordinated with the library in that way. We try to make sure that if we are going to take action on something, that it's never a surprise to anybody. But yeah, I'd say that's, other than fundraising for us over at Rosedale, that's our biggest role, is just being the cheerleader and the voice. We don't have space for book sale over at Rosedale, which is a silver lining in some ways. I did the book sale for a long time at Mount Pleasant, and it was awesome. But not having a book sale at Rosedale allows us to diversify how we bring in cash.
Sure.
So we're doing more partnering with local businesses and actually just asking for support from the community itself, which is a different culture of philanthropy altogether.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
For us, I mean, I think it's like, one, a community service, taking in books that people donate. Because there aren't a lot of places that you can drop them off, like maybe Goodwill or something like that, but you still have to drive. And I feel like since DC is so transient, we have a lot of people in our neighborhood that maybe stay here a few years, and then they're like, oh, you know, I have to move. I'm going to drop off the books at the library. We're able to take them in and repurpose them, reuse them, and sell them for money that goes directly to the library. I think also, too, as far as like advocacy, whenever I'm in the neighborhood, you know, I try to talk to people about the library. And yesterday I was at the gym in DuPont, and I saw this woman reading a library book, and I got really excited. I was like, wait, what branch is this from? And so we started talking, and then I started telling her about all the services that the library has, like Libby, Canopy, Linda. I mean, there's so many amazing things, and she didn't really know about them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whenever we can, just do a lot of advocacy hype.
Totally.
As Emily said, which is so spot on.
Yeah, I think like the awareness thing too is such a big thing. Like the library staff at DCPL, it's an incredible team, but you are in the library all day long talking about library stuff, and you know, that's you live and breathe it. But sometimes it is really helpful to have some folks out there who are willing to carry that message and to sell it to their friends and to say, hey, you love ebooks, but have you heard about X, Y, or Z? Because the library has that too.
Right.
And hearing it from a friend who's a trusted person is another way to build your customer base and make sure that DC taxpayers are getting what they've earned to use, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, just being that person who's like, oh man, I'm so excited about the fact that you're a library user. Let's talk about it. Yeah, it's definitely part of our role.
Yeah.
We're like the street team for like when record labels had a lot of money and they would send people out to hype it on the streets. Oh,
so, movement to rename Friends to Street Team.
To Street Team or Hype.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, that scenario that you just talked about, Carlos, is kind of like one of the, I don't know, the constant challenge of, you know, we know that we have lots of goodwill and people who use our collections but still might not even know about all the things that we have. And so, you know, staff, we're always looking for new strategies, but thank you for doing that as volunteers. Do you have any ideas for us for raising awareness?
One of the things, so when Emily was still president, I had run into a friend whose uncle had a massive vinyl record collection. There's probably like 1,200 records, and they needed to move them within that week because, you know, they had to evacuate this house. So we ended up having this pop-up sale for vinyl, and it was a Saturday, and I think close to 700 people came through on that Saturday. There were massive lines, and the cool thing about it is I think it brought a lot of young people, but also people that didn't know that they had a library in their own neighborhood. I mean, I talked to so many people like that. They're like, oh, I didn't know there was a library here. And the address is a little bit of a thing. I don't know. Yeah, thing. So it's 3160
16th Street,
where it's actually on Lamont. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. So, you know, it's a little bit confusing for folks, but I think when we have these sort of like kind of unique sales, I think it brings people in that maybe didn't know it was there and they actually seek it out.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you are representing just two of our friends groups and branches. There's, I don't know, are there any branches at this point that don't have a friends group?
Northwest One doesn't have a friends group. Right. But I think that's it. Deanwood just formed.
Great.
They're doing excellently. I think that's it. I think every other branch library has a friends group in some form or fashion.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
And what are, I work in the main office now, but I was at Southeast Branch Library, which has a friends group that has the monthly book sale down to a science, and we were always very grateful for their hard work. What are the other fundraisers, though, that you see friends groups trying out?
So this past Sunday, the Rosedale Friends just partnered with Atlas Brew Works over on West Virginia Ave. We were the guest bartenders from 2 to 6 on Sunday. I know, friends do it all. So we poured pints, and all tips from people that came in that day went back to the Rosedale Friends. So we called it Beer for Books. It's everyone likes beer. Everyone likes books. It was easy to sell to the neighborhood. And Atlas was super generous in hosting us. So we do actually a fair amount of that. We've worked with we work with Red Rocks. We work with the Pursuit Wine Bar on H Street. We're just making our way actually up and down H Street to ask folks to host us and to make sure they know there's a library on H Street, really, that's just right there.
Right.
We're really close to the Northeast Library as well, so we actually have a pretty nice working relationship with them.
Good.
But we want folks to know that if they're on H Street, if they're in that neighborhood, if they're new to that neighborhood, there is a facility that's right down the road for their use. So yeah, we do a lot of business partnering, and then we're working now on doing community development grants, like going to new projects through our ANC. That's another big avenue for us. And then membership, really, getting folks to pay dues and to get on our mailing list. And every year being able to count on that $25 or $50 from families is going to be a big chunk of our change long term.
Sure.
Just to add to that, so we recently had a fundraiser at Bowtie, which is an amazing Thai place in our neighborhood. And we've been working with them, I think, for a few years now. But this year was a little different. We added a silent auction aspect. We did get a large donation of a lot of first-run books and signed books from authors. So we were able to raise a little bit more money through the silent auction. But one thing that we're really excited about is this summer we are working with Mount Desert Island Ice Cream, which is an ice cream in our shop in our neighborhood. And we're trying to get them to have a library-themed ice cream flavor.
That's awesome.
So we're working on, there are a few ideas. Somebody, I think Lime Berry, I think someone came up with, so we've gotten a few things. And we talked to the owner, Brian, and he's interested in doing that. And, you know, it'd be something where we could sell some books outside, but also have, like, maybe part of the proceeds of the specialized flavor go to the library.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so we're excited.
That's fun. So wait, is Limeberry the name, or
there's a few other ones in contention?
Name, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's up to them, of course, like if they can make that as well. So, yeah, we're working together, but you know, it's something we've been talking about a lot because you know we go there a lot in the summer. It's in our neighborhood, so.
Yeah, I wonder what you're gonna name it.
Yeah, we might have. Maybe we'll have a contest.
It's a great idea.
So look out for that.
Yeah, the Mount Pleasant Friends. The PSA for folks who follow the Mount Pleasant Friends on Instagram. They do regular contests. So they'll put out trivia. They'll talk about what their Saturday book sale is all about, and then give away free totes, which are awesome, made by a local artist here in DC.
Yeah,
our colleague Tyler just did a shout out for the cool tote bags. You both have cool tote bags.
Yeah,
though, right?
I don't know
which one he's talking
really cool.
about.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah,
it's Carlos's screen printer friend, right?
Yeah,
yeah. He's got
our friend Nolan.
Nolan, yeah. He's got the world's best tattoos as well.
Yeah,
oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, I think some of the other branch friends groups do some interesting things. So I think Francis Gregory, they still do kind of a chili cook-off or something.
They have Jazz in the Garden, too, which is really great if folks haven't been to their jazz event in the summer.
At Francis Gregory?
At Francis Gregory. Okay. Yeah, that's really fun. Their chili cookout, very competitive. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to enter your chili, you have to be ready for the high stakes. What else do people do all around the city?
I feel like, doesn't one of the branches have like a health day? Or sort of like community day. I can't remember which branch it is. But
Northeast Southeast Friends of Capital View just had a community health day, okay. Which they sent went
really,
really well.
That's really cool, yeah.
Yeah. West End Friends has a classics book club, so they read like the Iliad and the Odyssey and then discuss them. It's very light topics. which I think that they get a fair amount of donations around, and they use that to gin up membership.
Does Woodridge, do they sponsor like the concerts on the...
Yeah, you know, the thing that they're doing this coming month, actually, is they're having their 10-year anniversary. Okay. I don't know if it's 10-year. It's the anniversary of the old building, which is where Art Enables is now.
Yeah.
So they're going to have an anniversary book sale and some type of celebration. Mm-hmm. So that should be pretty good.
Yeah.
December 4th.
I like that space a lot.
Yeah.
There was last year, the DC Zine Fest was at Art Enables, so that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, Woodridge Friends, past couple times when we've done the big bike ride... they've done a balloon arch for us to ride our bikes through. So that was
cool. That's amazing.
The bike ride was great last summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Friends Groups, that's one of a project I usually help with every year is the Big Library Bike Ride. And Friends Groups are very important to the success of that for just snacks and refreshments and hype, you know, just just fun, fun and celebration.
Yeah,
so
that's what we're here for. Snacks and hype.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. We don't want to talk only the minutiae of Friends of the Library, but I will just also mention that there is even a bigger umbrella association of friends called the Federation of Friends that kind of tries to build power among these friends groups, and that's a good thing too. I don't know if either of you would say anything about that.
Sure, yeah.
That
the
operation.
Federation of Friends is a, maybe the best way to describe it is a coalition organizing group or an umbrella group for all friends groups across the city. We are the resource sharing and organizational body of these friends groups. So we get together once every 2 months. We make sure everybody around the table goes around and shares their highlights, their lowlights, their desires, their struggles. And then we talk about system-wide what we're getting together to do as an entire friends footprint across DC.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's run by Susan Haight. She's from West End. She's a force. She's amazing.
She's great.
And I think it's got pretty great participation. It's really nice to see. We meet so early in the morning. It's an 8 a.m. meeting every other Wednesday. And it is, I mean, it's great if you're an early bird. So it's open to the public if anybody wants to come. And it's a very cool reflection of the city. Mm. So it's folks who've been volunteering, in some cases, since the 70s who are there, who can really join and tell stories and talk about long-term progress. And then the new kids on the block like us who are there to learn and to continue to advance the plot. Mm. I think that's what we do. We support primarily summer reading as a group, as a friends federation group of friends. But we're also really excited about MLK and how we can continue to really double down on what we do for the system, especially on sort of the horizon. There's this new thing that's the new huge thing that's going to happen.
That's right.
Yeah.
Our central library, it's about a year out for us to open that building. And I don't know, maybe we'll let our friends... you'll take the first ride down the slide or something like that.
That'd be great.
So, Emily, you work for the American Library Association. You're deep in library world. I know from your Instagram, you travel around the country, visiting lots of public libraries. What's your sense of how different library systems do this, have kind of friends groups that support them?
It is really different from library to library, state to state. Generally, I'd say how the DC Friends are doing it is a pretty good model for how the rest of the country is doing it. It's folks who are attached to the library in a way where they want to contribute. I think organizationally, it really varies. So DC is unique because we are individual to neighborhoods. in other places like Hennepin County, Minnesota is the one I know off the top of my head. Their Friends is countywide. So they have a huge fundraising force behind them. They're kind of like the foundation for that system. So they, because they're unified in this other way and organized in this other way, they have a slightly different fundraising role, more annual fund focused. But if you look at the Friends groups for LA County, or if you look at them for Boston Public, it really depends. I mean, how these Friends groups organizationally work with their branch. My hometown library in Massachusetts, their Friends group is just like ours, where it's just that branch that has that Friends group that serves them. Mm-hmm. They have awesome totes. They do coffee mugs. I mean, that's awesome. Yeah. I think it really does depend on who's in the neighborhood and who's caught the bug and how the library helps to facilitate their development and, you know, open the door to those conversations. I really do think it has to be a dialogue in order to be successful. So that's a huge part, I think, of how the library reaches out to the community and how the community reaches back that informs how those groups get started.
Sure.
Yeah. Hopefully that answered the question.
For sure. No, it's I think it's just interesting all the different ways that libraries form and fund themselves and support themselves and all that stuff. So
The some systems it's private, sometimes it's public, sometimes it's a combination of city and private. So it just, depends on how the historical nature of that community is and how those libraries bubbled up over time.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Did you both grow up going to public libraries?
Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, me too.
It was there a lot, yeah.
Okay, nice. I mean, I'm delighted that that's where my career has taken me. I wasn't a huge public library kid, though.
How'd you find yourself in the library space?
So out of college, I did a whole bunch of kind of nonprofit do-goody stuff and came and went from D.C. a couple times. I'm from Detroit, Michigan originally. And then I decided I might as well get a career. I'll go get a degree. And then and libraries just felt like this is a do no harm profession that I can feel good about. And, you know, my family were all teachers and social workers and things like that. So it's kind of the family business. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I come from a family of teachers and social workers as well. Mm-hmm. So that actually makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also just to chime in about the tote bags. One of the things that I really love is that they're reusable. And I think it goes back to the library. I mean, you know, people check out books. They don't have to keep buying them or the used books. They can come and, you know, buy them so cheaply rather than order them through, you know, some major corporation. You know, they can just get them through us, pass them on. So I love that aspect of the library. And that's why I think, like, I wanted to have totes. I was like, this is a great idea. People can use them for whatever. I made them big enough for groceries, for records, whatever you needed. Mm-hmm. And so I think they've had a long life. I see them around town. And sometimes when I see people with them that I don't know, I get really excited and I want to talk to them, but then I'm like, that could be weird, you know? So.
You don't sound like you are afraid to talk to strangers.
Definitely not.
Yeah, but sometimes I'm like, maybe I shouldn't, you know? It's like dark, we're at a bus stop, you know?
I took one of the totes recently for the Beer for Books event at Atlas, and I repurposed it into an apron.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's on the Rosedale Library Friends Instagram if anybody's curious. But it's like, you know when you wash a tote and then it gets, you know, six inches smaller than you thought it was going to? So I cut off the front and then tied the straps into a little apron back.
See,
yeah.
Perfect.
Clever.
Reusing, yeah.
Sustainability inspired by Carlos.
Excellent. So you all use the library and stay connected to what we're doing. What are some of the programs that we do or the services that we provide that you love to tell people about? And what would you love to see us doing more of?
That's a great question. I'm a huge Fab Lab fan. Mm-hmm. I think the Fab Lab as a creative art space, as a skill building place, as a place where you get to play with toys you wouldn't otherwise see in your day-to-day life is incredible.
What is the Fab Lab?
The Fab Lab is the makerspace.
Yeah.
I guess that's the shortest route to defining it. So there's a whole bunch of cool tools in there. Laser cutters, 3D printers, sewing machines. I actually don't know if there's anything new recently.
Is there a recording studio too?
There, like so digital. As part of our kind of umbrella labs, we do have a studio lab still that is actually in our Shepherd Park branch at the moment. While MLK Library was closed, that was where they are.
Yeah, it's such a great space. And I think generally if you're someone who is, I'm an aspiring maker, I like dabble in sewing, So if you're someone who wants to play and experiment and do it with someone who's going to problem solve with you, it's just a really unique place to be able to go and to be able to go for free.
Mm-hmm. Have you partaken of the, like, the 3D printer and that side of making?
So I worked with the FabLab SD in particular this mm-hmm. year to create, for the beginning of the new Congress, we created challenge coins that were designed and created here in D.C. We made 535, one for every member of Congress. They were laser print on one side that had the ALA logo and our sort of motto on it. And on the back side, we had the traditional 3D printed library person who's holding the book, like the international sign for a librarian or a library space. And we glued them together. And the goal of that was to physically be able to hand a member of Congress and their staff a piece of technology that's created in the library itself. So I spent most of December and early January with SD, like, gluing those two pieces mm-hmm. of coins together, and then the rest of January handing them out on mm-hmm. the Hill, which was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the most I've done in the 3D printing realm.
That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
What about you, Carlos?
I really love the community space that you can, you know, you can get the big rooms, get a small room for studying, for reading. I mean, you look at, there are like massive organizations, WeWork, Cove, that charge you for these things and charge you a lot of money. And you have this free space in your neighborhood, and it's amazing. Wi-Fi is free as well. So I love that aspect of it, because I think it gets people that maybe can't afford these spaces, maybe they're an all-volunteer group, that they can meet regularly at the library for free.
Yeah.
I also love that there are free shows, like music, live music, especially the punk shows in the basement of the MLK library. And, you know, it's funny, like, you see so many young kids, and some of them, it's like their first exposure to live music, and maybe inspires them to do music or be involved some way. And I would love to see maybe some live music at Mount Pleasant. But one of the things that I've been really pushing for is getting vinyl into the library, maybe even at just one library that you can actually check out. Maybe current stuff, local artists. I mean, we have so many great, like, labels in D.C. and a great music tradition. I think it'd be amazing to have mm-hmm. vinyl that people can actually check out.
Did you, I mean, before Martin Luther King Library closed, there was still an LP collection there. Did you use that much?
You know, I looked through it a few times. It was, I think the thing over the years, with vinyl, a lot of stuff can be lost, sometimes stolen, you know, like great records, you know, people are just like, oh, I'm going to hold on to this. And also, I think it was a little bit outdated. There was a lot of classical stuff still left and stuff that maybe it's just, it didn't really pertain to DC as much. So I think maybe in the future, maybe we could like curate it a little bit more.
But. Yeah, it had definitely not been
right.
developed mm-hmm. after a certain point in history. It was yeah. kind of something we still owned. And a lot of people, it kind of survived mm-hmm. till LPs were popular again, yeah. which I think probably generated an uptick in usage, but it definitely, mm-hmm. we hadn't been buying new vinyl
right.
in decades.
It seemed literally. Like that, yeah, yeah when yeah, I looked yeah. through the collection.
Great show tunes in that collection.
yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you. Let okay. me tell you. I increased my depth of knowledge about musical theater with that collection.
right.
So clearly music is a big thing for you. Do you use our online music collection much? Freegal?
I have used it somewhat. I actually use, I mean, for me, you know, there's so many other streaming services. But the things that I love for the online apps are like Libby. That's mm-hmm. like, I use it all the time. I tell people all the time about it. There's also lynda.com if folks don't know about that. It's a free service where you can take online classes for free and using a library card. And then my favorite thing is Canopy that has the Criterion Collection and different movies. It's sort of like Netflix, but I think a little bit more curated with indie stuff and
yeah,
foreign
the
films.
Indie stuff on Canopy is
yeah,
awesome.
It's so
really
good.
Is. Yeah. And I'm a huge Libby fan. I feel like I'm on Libby all the time,
yeah.
actually.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of my biggest uses for the library. Although I definitely physically will go to the library and check out a bunch of books
definitely.
And like walk all the way home.
yeah. Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many library cards do you have attached to your Libby? I have four.
You have four. I have two. I just have two. And, you know, shout out, I guess, to the Alexandria Public Library System. If you're in the DMV, you can use your DC license to get an Alexandria card, which is pretty cool.
We're all one big, happy family. So we all have reciprocity with each other. So,
that's great.
Yeah. I have Montgomery County and PG County on my Libby app.
That's awesome. PG County is on my list for 2020.
There you go.
Yeah.
Diamond here reminded me that we were going to talk about Little Free Libraries, which we were talking about a little bit. I guess the question is, how does everyone feel about them?
I mean, I think they're great. There's so many around the Mount Pleasant Library in our neighborhood and surrounding neighborhood. And we do get an excess of children's books that we oftentimes put out there. There's a church right across Sacred Heart that, you know, I'm sure some people come over and get them, because usually we'll put some out on Saturday and they'll be gone by Tuesday. So I think it's a great way to still, like, you know, maybe there are books that we can't sell or, like, you know, want other people to check out. I think it's a nice resource.
Yeah, I think so too. I know there's a lot, it's hotly contested, yes. You know, yes. There's a lot of feelings about yes. Little Free Libraries. Mm-hmm. I feel like the free library thing for us, like the more times you can get people to think the word library or say the word library or interact with literature of any kind, the better. And I also think that while they might not be your traditional, you know, staffed facility with a makerspace, I would love a tiny free makerspace along the city.
Okay, little 3D printer.
They do have that same sort of spirit of discovery. Like, oh, what am I going to stumble on? What can I explore here? How can I, like, incorporate this interaction with information into my everyday life? And I think that is that spirit they share with any library space, just that serendipity. So I like them. I think they're adorable. I like that in D.C., some Girl Scouts troop in Mount Pleasant mapped a bunch of them. They did a little free library walk for a while that we were handing out their flyer for, which I thought was super fun. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have looked at their website before. Have you ever, like, considered purchasing one before? Just, or, like, explored the option?
I know it's a thing you can do.
Yeah, they're not cheap, those things. They really aren't. Yeah, you know, just because I'm nosy, I went on there to look and see, you know, what kind can you buy? Can you make your own? Or is it, do you have to be a Little Free Library TM in order to be considered? I think all these questions are open to interpretation. But
for sure.
The kit you buy online is not. I'm going to look it up right now, actually.
Sure.
And also, just a quick note. I think unfortunately, with these immigration policies that we have in this country now, there are a lot of folks that are not... maybe don't want to share their information at a public library, because you never know. I mean, I don't know the policy on what's sharing or not, but I just think a lot of people are any sort of public institutions where they have to give out their information. Some people may be a little bit like weary, especially in these times, you know, with good reason. And now, you know, with the free public libraries, what we've tried to do is, you know, drop stuff off like books in Spanish or different languages, just to kind of mix it up for folks that maybe aren't getting to our branch.
So the price for a two-story composite Little Free Library, $349.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you want the double door, it's $369.
For the French doors.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, speaking of immigrants and new Americans using the library, Mount Pleasant certainly is a neighborhood where we provide a lot of service, hopefully.
Really?
And, any thoughts or observations on serving particularly our Latinx community in D.C. and what we could do better?
I mean, I think it's great. Most librarians do speak Spanish. So I think that's really helpful, especially for new folks. And a lot of times I see on the bulletin boards, like, they have, like, workshops on how to apply for citizenship, different things like that. Maybe some ESL classes that I've seen on the bulletin board. So I think they are doing a really good job, and I think they do a lot of community outreach and try to partner with different organizations like the church across the street, different schools. So I think they do a really good job.
Good. Glad to hear it. Nick just reminded me that we have a mini makerspace in our tech truck, but that is not a Little Free Library.
It's close. Nick. It's close. Really.
One thing, I don't know if... you all know about this, our electronic resources librarian has gotten these little pop-up Wi-Fi libraries to put in kind of commuter-friendly spaces. So there's one at Union Station right now where if you're in proximity to it, you can download ebooks without even using your library card. It's just a set of ebooks that you get to download for free, and they disappear from your device after a certain amount of time.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What's the platform?
I can't even remember what it's called, which is bad, but we're going to print out a little MLK library to house one of these things.
I love
it. And that's also being done by Nick at Mount Pleasant. So Nick, get on that.
Way to go, Nick.
Just to chime in one more thing. The Mount Pleasant Library this year was responsible for Hispanic Heritage Month, and
yes.
They did an amazing job.
Yes.
I just want to give them a shout out, like the staff there, and they coordinated with other libraries as well. So
yeah.
That's always great.
This is a fun fact from the American Library Association. Breaking news. We have this grant program going on right now where you can apply to ALA to get grants to support your work on the census, to support fair and inclusive counts for the 2020 census. And one of the very first applications we got, the grants opened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ala.org/census if you want more information about it. So 25 libraries will get $2,000 to support their efforts. And the Mount Pleasant Library staff was the very first group to apply,
awesome.
Or one of the very first to support. And I think it is a hard to count population because it's a lot of folks who speak multiple languages and school age kids. And there's a stat out there, I hope I get this right, from the Georgetown Center on Poverty and Law, that libraries are within 5 miles and often even within 1 mile of hard to count populations.
Mm.
So the census is going to be a huge thing. And just, shout out to Mount Pleasant for being on their game, like within minutes, really.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Good.
We have a great staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. I told you we could also just talk about what we're reading. So that's something. And I looked up what books you have checked out with your library.
It's too embarrassing.
Any favorite books that you're reading right now?
So I have been reading for way too long to be really excited about because I keep rechecking it out. Theft by Finding by David Sedaris.
Okay.
Oh, it's his published diaries from when he's growing up and going to art school. And it's like reading... It's like sort of like a Twitter, like it's just these little musings and they're so good. And you can see all of the threads of his other books coming through his diaries and these insights on his sisters. And it's great. So that's what I'm reading right now.
Yeah. Long, big book, right?
Is it? So on my ebook, I feel like my progress bar is always at 60%. And maybe it's because I'm not reading fast enough or because the book is long. I can't actually tell.
Okay.
Because it's an ebook.
Probably, I'm sure he read it as an audiobook too, right?
Which would be
a fun way to do that book.
Yeah. But. I just listened to Calypso too, actually, which was great. I would really love to see him in person next time he's here in D.C.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's what I'm reading right now.
All right. Nice.
Yeah.
Can I ask you as a question, do you have like a book in different bags that you're reading? Like how many books are you reading at the same time? Because I have like a book for like... the bus, then a book at work for lunch, and then different ones. I'm like reading 4 books at a time sometimes.
Yeah, I totally feel that. I have a book on like my downstairs chair, my upside side table. The book I read on the bus is this Sedaris book. I'm reading The Rules for Visiting is like my downstairs book right now, which is it's beautiful actually. It's a quick one. I'm sure if either of you heard of this book before. It's this woman story about a woman who decides in her life that she needs community. So she's trying to reconnect with an old friend. And she goes to her house and she comes up with these rules for the visit. They haven't spent that much time together for a while. Mm. It's great. And then I'm reading the Saint Laurent biography. That's my fall asleep book.
Okay.
Which is pretty good. What are you reading, David?
I am reading Exit West, which was a big book a couple of years ago. And I'm listening to the Tales of the City books by Armistead Maupin because I never read them in the first place. And Frances McDormand reads them, which is very cool. Those are my books right now.
That's great.
So I am reading currently 2 books, Reduce, Reuse, Reimagine, which is a local author, this woman, Beth Porter, who works for Green America. She wrote a book. She lives in our neighborhood. So I thought it was a really interesting book on recycling and the environment. And then this book on music called Meet Me in the Bathroom, which I have had to check out 4 times because they have holds on them. And I try to renew and I'm like, maybe I should ask Nick if he could bump me up a little bit. You know,
friends do not get that privilege.
No, of course we don't. Yeah. For the record, we don't. But that book is really interesting because it talks about this band from DC that inspired like the early 2000s, like the Strokes and bands like that, Interpol, and they were called Jonathan Fire Eater. Mm-hmm. And they were originally from DC. I think they maybe went to St. Albans or something like that, and then moved to New York. So it's an interesting book. Yeah.
Nice. I will say, in terms of this issue of putting books on hold, we have a new service called Express Books, which is the purpose of it is to kind of create some equity around the fact that when new books come out, people who are on their game in terms of putting holds electronically kind of get them all sent to their branch, and that ends up kind of taking some hot books from parts of the city that where we want to make sure there's equitable access to books. But anyone can go to any of these libraries. Francis Gregory, which is one of the most beautiful buildings in Washington, D.C., has an express collection. So if there's a book that you can't find somewhere, see if it's there. And you can drive over there and take in this beautiful building and check out one of these great books also.
Okay.
That book you just described is not in the express collection, so it won't help you with that one. Okay, we got to wrap up. But okay. Any further thoughts? Who are the enemies of the library?
The enemies of the library. Oh, it's such a good question. I'll have to contemplate that. No, join your friends. If y'all are interested in contributing to the gem of DC and to finding a community of people, I mean, the best thing about the friends is that you get to hang out with folks who are awesome, who are into music and into books and into sustainability. And really, there's nothing better than finding that community of folks to hang out with. So join your friends. Every branch has one. Go in and ask for information on how to get in touch with them, or get in touch with me and Carlos through Twitter or
Instagram.
Yeah.
And I think on our website, it's dclibrary.org/friends.
Okay. Exactly.
And that'll kind of, that can be your portal to finding your local group and who to contact and all that good stuff.
And you can find us at dclibraryfriends.org as well.
Okay.
So yeah, please, please. We're always looking for volunteers and other street team members.
Exactly.
Cool. Any other final thoughts, Carlos?
I think that's it. I mean, just to reiterate what Emily said, just we always are looking for volunteers, and there's always fun stuff to do. So
great.
Hopefully join.
Great. Well, thank you both for being on there. Do you either of you want to say what your social media handles are for the world?
Sure. I'm at Elwags, ELWAGS, on everything. So yeah, at Elwags.
And mine is Izzy Carlos, IZZYCARLOS, because my last name is really hard to pronounce, so just call me Izzy sometimes.
Very good. All right. Well, let's wrap up, and thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you, David.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. This has been an episode of DC Public Library on Full Service Radio. Visit dclibrary.org for more information and send us your feedback at DCPL on Twitter and at DC Public Library on Instagram. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.